Hello everyone and welcome to Toonami Therapy on December 17th of 2020. I am Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And we're here to talk about some of the anime we've been watching, some of which airs on Toonami, and along with some other things that are that have nothing to do with anime or Toonami.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll start out with, as always, starting out with the Toonami stuff. So here we have Sword Art Online, episode 90. So in this one, they're doing some fighting stuff. They're going up against enemies, and I'm just realizing I'm actually having trouble remembering what happened in this episode outside of a cameo appearance. Well, more than a cameo, I guess, by characters from the movie, and also a lengthy flashback that I've heard is actually very different from what was in the light novels.
Yeah, so the characters from the movie showed up. You didn't see that, I assume.
I didn't know they were from the movie. I never saw the movie. I know nothing about the movie. My knowledge is that everyone said that apparently there's some everyone just like said, oh, in the movie, you get to see Asuna's nipples. Is that true, by the way?
No.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Not that I know of. I don't remember seeing anything of the sort.
Or maybe I'm wrong. I just seem to remember there's some sort art online animation thing. I thought it was a movie where that was apparently the big teaser that people were bringing up about it.
Yeah, I don't remember that happening at all. I just remember it being better than normal Sword Art Online. Like it was like probably the best Sword Art Online has ever been. Not that it was great, but it just, you know, was pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Would it be something worth watching sometime, you think?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so they show up and then just disappear, like, after a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you were wondering, is this filler? And I looked it up, and yes, it's filler. It was filler. They just put it in.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was that we got that flashback of that one bad guy whose name I can't remember. It's just about how he hates all the Japanese, which, again, this is what I've heard. Someone was saying, no, that's stupid. In the light novel's backstory made a lot more sense. They really changed it. So I'm like, oh, huh. They keep changing stuff and making it stupid. Is what I keep hearing. Like, that weird fan service scene with Leafa apparently wasn't a fan service-y at all in the book. The anime made it that way.
Yeah.
But other than that, all I can really remember from this episode is that a bunch of people fought.
Yeah, lots of fighting and Kirito is a vegetable, which I found out is a meme, actually. So there's some pretty good stuff about Kirito being a vegetable on the internet. That's as an episode, it wasn't bad, so I'll give it that.
Yeah, what was so weird to me, though, is when they show up from the movie, and I was just, like, thinking, but you don't say who they... I mean, I guess you can't really have a character say, wow, it's those people from the movie, but they didn't really do anything to explain who they were to anyone who didn't see the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so then we've got, Fire Force episode 29, so, Shinra is still fighting against Sharon, is what his name apparently is. He gets a flashback in which he and his supervisor talk about rock and roll. Which was actually a little interesting. Oh, rock and roll. It's an old, say? Well, it used to be popular, but not anymore because this takes place in a post-apocalyptic world, which you can tell by all the goofy comedy that occurs in the series. But, so he's managing to do that. Meanwhile, all the other characters are dealing with the mooks, except they get a super giant, powerful mook enemy that they can't beat normally. So they they manage to combine all the fires to be able to help defeat it and hit it with then throw it into that and manage to beat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have much to say about the episode. It was okay.
Yeah, I thought it was reasonably enjoyable. I was a little surprised because everyone always complains. I've seen people complain about how they don't like how Tamaki seems to not really do much other than just be used for dumb fan service. But here she actually was important in the fight. So, I don't know if this was an exception or if people are just exaggerating that, but that was a little notable to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then we've got Assassination Classroom episode 14. So what's his, I can't even remember what his name was. The guy who always wears that hood, gets one of the students to agree with him with his plan to beat Koro Sensei, but he misleads the student. He made him think that it was about alerting them, but it was actually about apparently setting off explosives that the guy set up to make all the kids to make the water that the kids were swimming in, the sort of swimming pool, fall off, and then they all, the rushing water sends them off a cliff, but Koro Sensei manages to save them, but that, hurts him, so they're able to, what's his name, hooded guy, and another character whose name I can't remember, the other guy with the tentacles, they're like, yeah, we're going to beat him, but then the kids stop them because they're like, well, hey, you guys are jerks and we want to get the prize money ourselves. And so that was basically the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like this episode very much. My biggest problem with it is that, supposedly, the point of the show is to kill Koro Sensei, but now we're getting this stupid thing where, well, he really isn't that bad of a guy, even though he's planning on destroying the Earth. Well, at least that's what we've been told. That could be a lie, too. I just don't understand how this furthers their goal. It seemed just kind of like a excuse to have the swimsuit episode, which there must be one in every anime, at least one swimsuit episode, and we got that. Unfortunately, we didn't have really any girls. We just had Nagisa. That was our only girl we had. So it just seemed like a waste of time. So, I didn't like this episode very much. I hope that, well, I kind of hope there aren't that many episodes left, but if there are a bunch of episodes still left, which I don't know, hopefully it gets a little better than this.
Well, we are drawing closer to the end of this season, but then there's a second season after that.
Rats.
I am looking forward, honestly, to the rest of the season because I think it becomes a bit more plot based after this. But that'll have to wait till next year.
Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't huge on this episode either. Okay. So, that does it for our Toonami stuff. Then we're on to Ghost in the Shell episode 38. So they're trying to find a copy of that the individual 11 essay that they've kind of been talking about throughout this season. Anyway, and now I'll say it after I get to the I go through it. So Togusa's off to try to figure that out. Meanwhile, the others are trying to I don't know, some sort of technological thing in unlocking information about something. Like, I was confused about the specifics of what was going on, but they were trying to activate they were trying to figure out how some virus worked. Meanwhile, the bad guys, the individual 11 guys, show up and, they get together and, seem like they're gonna, cause some big thing, but then they all just manage to get a bunch of attention on them and then all commit suicide on each other. And yeah, that was the episode. Everyone's left wondering, whoa, what's going on there? So,
yeah, the first half was really confusing and then it got pretty exciting at the end there. So, I spent the first, 10 or 15 minutes okay, what's going on? And then it kind of made more sense. And now, this is where I get confused with Ghost in the Cell, because sometimes the episodes lead into each other and other times they're standalone. And I have a hard time figuring out which ones are which. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can tell this one, mm-hmm. what this one is, but it was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, you mirror my thoughts. Some of the earlier stuff wasn't so interesting, but the second part of it was pretty good. Kind of the opposite of the previous episode, actually.
Right.
It started out promising and then just became, I'm going to narrate a story that doesn't matter. Yep. But what I was saying earlier, I want to bring up now that I'm confused about is, so Togusa is trying to find the written copy of the individual 11, and what I'm, and people say there isn't one, there isn't actually a copy of it. It's not an actual essay. It's just an ideology. But then I'm confused because when Togus is talking to the guy who supposedly has a copy, except then his copy has disappeared, so I don't know how that exactly worked. But I could understand if it was taken, but if there wasn't one, how would he ever think he had one? Presumably he looked at it. But what confuses me is the fact that the guy is also saying, if you just want the content of it, it's been translated and putting in all these other things. And I'm just like, has it? Because I thought the whole thing was that people couldn't find it, which is why they're looking in these for these specific copies. But if there are specific written copies, why were none of them ever at least photocopied? Or I was just confused about what there was necessary, because so either these written things, these specific actually published ones, are the only ones that exist, in which case I'm just left wondering why didn't people beforehand scan them or whatever and make them available, or there are copies elsewhere, which wouldn't make sense because we find out that the essay doesn't actually exist, but in that, I'm very confused about how the essay not existing is supposed to work with what was going on with what they were looking for.
Yeah, I accidentally just spoiled myself on it. I just was Googling Individual 11 because I wanted to see what their logo was, and then it comes up with the Ghost in the Cell wiki and what. So anyway, don't Google Individual 11 if you want to still have a surprise. So,
okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to see the logo, and they like to spoil stuff that easy. So,
anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention was an unfortunately really clunky piece of dialogue that I had to write down just because of how goofy it sounds. Remember how when we briefly talked about Star Trek before, I was talking about how their conversation at the start of the episode, like, was just them, was really awkward and just served as exposition to the viewer. This one has a character. So when the Individual 11 guys are all together, they're all like talking about the stuff they've done to try to further the cause. You know, people are like, oh, I killed this person. Oh, I caused this havoc. And one of the guys says that he killed like the CEO. And then in response, one of the others says, you killed Ichiro Jima, the man who made a fortune founding a net bank despite the fact that he started out as a refugee? And I'm just like, who would ever say that?
It doesn't sound too weird to me.
It's just the fact. Look, it's a small. It's just one line. It's not a big deal. But just the fact he felt the need. Maybe the way it was phrased, especially, you killed Ichiro Jima, and here I'm going to explain who he is, even though presumably we all know, and do so in the awkward statement of the man who made a fortune founding a net bank, despite the fact he started out as a refugee. I just thought it was just such a goofy sounding line, but yeah, it's just one line, and otherwise the scene was fine. It just stuck out at me. Okay. So after that, we have Yashahime episode 11. So there is a, so they come across a, man-eating pond. You know, this, I know that Little Rascals movie got bad reviews. I saw it when I was a kid. I can barely remember, but there's always it. So maybe it was terrible, but I remember one joke that was actually really funny from it. And that was a part where, they're trying to make money. So they're at this fair and they're telling these people, come in and see the man eating chicken. And except then when you go in, there's literally just a guy who's eating chicken there. Anyway. <I get. laughs> So, they're doing that. And so then they end up, having to fight it, except it turns out it's actually two different monsters. So they work together and manage to beat them. And yeah, that's basically the episode.
Yeah, and so everyone continues to, in the Yashahime Facebook group, everyone continues to be pissed off because because no mention, we did get a little mention, I think, by Myoga. Like, Myoga is like the only character who was like from the original thing that we're actually seeing anything from. And people are losing patience waiting for everyone else to show up or what's going on with them. And I understand the frustration. It just feels like they're teasing us with this idea of, oh yeah, these are their children, but we're not going to tell you anything about like what happened to them. So yeah, it just feels like a whole bunch of just standalone episodes about these characters being put together. Yeah, it just isn't working very well right now.
Well, to be fair, a lot of the episodes of the original Inuyasha were like that.
Yeah, true.
One thing I've been wondering about, that first episode where we saw all the characters from the original series, you know, a few years later and stuff, and then there's that, and I was just left wondering, was that necessary? I was like wondering, if they hadn't done that, would this feel more or less frustrating? Because that just set up the expectations of, oh man, what's going to be happening with them in the future? Because they had the episode about them, and then 10 episodes later, oh, we didn't find out anything. But on the other hand, I guess that also served to kind of like say, hey, the characters, they're here. Whereas if it had just jumped into completely new ones, it might have been more annoying. So I don't know which one it is. It just makes me wonder. But yeah, I agree. We need to, I'm just left wondering if maybe all they're doing this because they have to get over up to, I think, like the 26 episodes or whatever this season will be, which of course makes me wonder if maybe, well, maybe it should have just done 13 episodes, but I guess there's more money to be made with 26. So,
well, maybe it's the good old cliche. It's all just a dream.
Yeah. What's, yeah, like that one episode like that, you know, I never saw, it, but there's that sort of infamous part in the TV show Dallas, where it was revealed one of the seasons was entirely a dream.
Yeah, and wasn't Roseanne, like the last season of Roseanne, was like all a fanfic written by one of the characters?
I think so. Okay, I didn't see the final episode. I haven't really seen that much of Roseanne, but from what I remember, what happens in the final episode is it reveals that the whole series was just some book that Roseanne, the character, wrote. But that she changed stuff in it and lists a few examples. And one of the changes is that the final season in which they won the lottery, they said, oh no, they didn't actually win the lottery. So, but there's other stuff also. It was saying, well, the series didn't happen, except it kind of happened. I mean, in the fictional world, it basically said, I understand it, the series you saw was based on the actual events in the fictional world. So you watched a fictional series about that was based on a fictional events. It's not as extreme as Saint Elsewhere, which said that the whole series took place in the imagination of an autistic kid.
What was the one that happened in a snow globe?
That was Saint Elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
That means like none of it mattered. At least Roseanne, you can say, well, that stuff similar to that happened. I don't know how they approached that in the revival. I didn't see that.
Well, one time we were talking, and at the table we were like, yeah, did you hear that Roseanne died of a drug overdose? And my dad thought it was the real Roseanne. See, he was like, oh, yeah, that was bound to happen at some point. And he thought it was the real Roseanne died, so that was pretty funny.
I just don't know why, like, you would just decide to say, well, all of it was a dream, like the whole series. At least with Dallas, it was a matter of saying, I think like the original creator or the head writer or someone, they were absent for that season because they left or they got fired or something. Then they came back and they were like, well, I didn't like that season, so they changed it to be a dream. At least that was just one season.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Newhart was also revealed to all be a dream at the end of his character from the Bob Newhart show, But that one, I mean, it was a comedy, so I assume it worked better in that case.
Yeah.
There was actually a parody of it. They made some alternate ending for Breaking Bad where, I can't believe I'm blanking on it, but the guy who plays, where Bryan Cranston, on who's the main character of Breaking Bad, and this goofy alternate ending thing they film has his character from Malcolm in the Middle wake up, and the whole thing was, and the whole series was a dream of his, and it freaks him out. he's like just nervous and is saying all this stuff. He's like, and there's this kid, and he always said the B word.
What about those alternate endings to Lost? Remember, they had like a Survivor ending to Lost.
I don't know about that one. I didn't pay that much attention to Lost.
Okay.
All I know is my mother was a huge fan and she didn't like the ending. Anyway, so wow, I don't even know how to get back from there. You know what? I think that conversation we just had was just a dream. So let's move on. Well, actually, that brings us to the end of all the anime stuff. I guess we can be giving our top threes now. So for me... This was a better week than last week, at least. But I would be ranking them as I put Assassination Classroom in third place. Then I would in second place. I would have Fire Force, and then the winner would be Ghost in the Shell.
Let's see. I'm going to put third place will be Ghost. No, you know what? I'll put Ghost in the Cell in second place. And I'll put Yasuhime in third place. I'll put first place will be that first show, Sword Art Online. That gets my first place vote for the week. Even though it was really weird that you just bring the characters in and then you get rid of them in one episode, but I seem to enjoy that one the most this week, so that's what gets it.
Okay. Well, that's the end of the anime stuff on Toonami Therapy for those who just want to clock out after that. So, you can find our previous episodes at toonamitherapy.podbean.com. And, time to move on. Discuss the finale of The Amazing Race. So, honestly, I thought this was kind of a boring episode.
Oh, yeah. I was afraid that you really enjoyed it, and I was going to have to try to explain why I thought it was a really, really dull episode. It was just a complete domination by the one team. And the funny thing is, those other two teams pretty much dragged them to the end by doing all the challenges for them. And even though they were clearly one of the best teams, so it would make sense that they wouldn't help them out because they beat them in the end. So why did they do all the challenges for them? That was just stupid. And they had that rule that they couldn't help each other during that cake challenge. They couldn't help their teammate. Well, if you can't help your teammate, you shouldn't be able to help other teams either. So I hope they go and change that rule. But knowing CBS, they'll double down on what happened this season and make it even more make these alliances even more of a thing, because what I've learned from Survivor is that whenever there's something that the fans hate, the probes and the producers tend to, like, if the fans hate it, then the producers make it even more prominent in later seasons instead of deciding that they're going to take it out. So expect more of these alliances whenever they get around to filming another season, which might not be in another decade or so, given what's going on in the United States.
I don't think it'll be that long, but it will be a while, definitely. Before I get into the episode, though, here is something amusing, because I was looking at Twitter because I was trying to see, like, some what people thought of it. Just looking who has, looking at, like, you know, just searching for the hashtag Amazing Race, which, when you put the words together, I keep misreading as Amazing Grace. I just saw, like, someone who made the tweet just saying, just referring to, like, the Amazing Race Israel finale. It's just like saying Tannehill is taken down and put on a stretcher. It might be safe to say that he and Asif are out of the race. And I'm just like, this sounds on a stretcher. I'm interested in this. But it sounds more interesting than the episode we watched.
Yeah, definitely.
The problem I have with this leg is the fact that so there's one task that was maybe a bit tricky. The first no, not the first one, but was it the second? The one where they had to find the thing in the cake or whatever. That was the hard one, and that's of course where, because one, Will and James got ahead of that, they just had an insurmountable lead. Because the later tasks were like a cinch. Mm-hmm. There's the one where you just kind of have to sort of go skydiving. I'm like, that's kind of interesting, but it's not really something that you can get ahead of other teams in. So what was really the point of it?
Right. It was just kind of to put it on, use it to promote the final episode. That's how I saw it.
Actually, that's a good point. Maybe, and then the one where they construct a globe, that was a little more interesting. That's something I could see maybe changing stuff. But even that wasn't that interesting. The problem is, for something like this, what you want, ideally, is to have who's in first place and such shift up. One team takes an early lead, but then they lose to another, but then, like, they get behind in the next task, or maybe they start losing, maybe it's at least narrowed. But the fact was, Will and James, they were so far ahead, you never even saw the other teams get to the challenges while they were at them.
Right, yeah, it was a complete blowout. It was really boring television. So hopefully the producers noticed that it was really boring, because it was like, by the time he found the baby in the cake, like, we already knew they were going to win. And not to mention the fact that the other two teams had moments where you heard them say, "This was such a great experience." And meanwhile, everything Will and James were saying was, "We really want to win." So it was like, okay, we get it. They're going to win. It was just really boring.
Yeah. I actually saw someone on a discussion, I think it was when I was looking at some stuff on Reddit, someone mentioned that they were thinking Will and James would win because they said that they were, at least in that person's view, unusually defensive about, like, being on, like, their behavior on The Amazing Race. And you're thinking, oh, well, that must mean they won, because if they lost, they'd just be like, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that person was right. Honestly, I spent a bunch of this episode thinking, I complained a bunch about the the final task in the previous leg, that might have actually worked okay in this leg if that had been the final thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But preferably, like, maybe a simpler version of it, because, like I said, I think that one was way too hard. If they had, like, dropped it down to 3 or something instead of 4, I think that might have worked. But, yeah, I was thinking that would have worked better here.
Yeah.
It was just not a very interesting final episode. I've seen some people like saying they really disliked the season as a whole. I was enjoying it up until these final 2 episodes.
Yeah, I didn't like it mainly because of the whole alliance thing. If we didn't have this stupid alliance dominate the season, and people do the other challenges for them, you know, here's the answer. I mean, that's what ruined it for me. Now, we were wondering, like, was this going on at like 3 in the morning in New Orleans? Because there's like no one on those streets and it's pitch black. So it seemed like they had all those challenges at like 3 in the morning in New Orleans. That way they were able to do all those things, like go down the street with a giant ball and no one else being like no other people in the area, you know?
Oh, that's an interesting point. Reminds me of the joke of how people always say, how is it that Jack Bauer never gets caught in traffic in Los Angeles?
I lived in Los Angeles. I can tell you, actually, people are nicer drivers out in California than they are in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I didn't mind the alliance. It was just towards the end where it just, the only time the alliance really bothered me was in the previous episode where they're just like, well, we've got the thing. We'll just shut this other team out and win. Which I think might have happened even if not for the alliance, because I think that was just a smart way to go about solving that task.
But if you solve it first, why help out anyone? Like, why would you want to bring along the strongest teams to the end? If I solved it first, I wouldn't tell anyone. I'd be like, okay, so long. And, you know.
Well, the reason, the way they were able to do it was the fact that they got together and they were like trying all the permutations. They were like, okay, we know these ones. Let's try all the permutations. So that's how they were able to get to, well, actually, once they got through all the permutations and none worked, then they were able to figure out that they were doing it in the wrong way and they had to change the order up a bit. And then I think they still kept doing that because they weren't sure. That's the thing. If you have 3 people doing it, if you're just guessing wildly, then you're going to you're just going through all the combinations to see which one works. Then if you have 3 people doing it, you'll go way faster through that. You can go through all of them. Whereas so that's why I think, like, legitimately the best strategy into that for that one was to just do it that way. Get together so you can go through all the combinations until someone figures it out. Now, you might be saying that maybe what you're saying is they could do that, and then once the team gets it right, they could say, well, so long, suckers, we're out of here.
Right. But
the teams would have known what that team went in with, because they were in the agreement and having everyone go through specific scheduled stuff. They would have just go, oh, well, they know that was the one they were going up with, so we know it, and we'll just copy them.
Yeah, except that didn't seem to happen. Like, they still had to tell them the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw them telling them the answer. So, obviously, I don't know. I just did not like it. And, I'm going to have to take a break for a moment here. So, we can pause for like 2 minutes here, Khalid. Oh,
okay.
I'll be right back.
Sure. Okay, we're back. We took a little quick bit of a break there, which works out fine because we were pretty much done talking with that anyway. So, all right, let's move on to Star Trek The Next Generation, Episode 5, The Last Outpost. So, this episode is our introduction to the Ferengi. The Enterprise is after the Ferengi because they took something from an outpost or monitoring. I don't know. They took something from somewhere. So they go after them. But then apparently the Ferengi immobilize them and start draining their power. And they can't figure... and then finally they're... But then it turns out that that wasn't the Ferengi doing that. They're in the same position also and end up... and it's something from the planet. So they end up going... beaming down with the Ferengi, who kind of betray them and try to steal stuff from them. But then it turns out that the thing that was doing that to them was a relic of this old civilization, and this guy and some computer generated image, or maybe he's an android, or maybe he's an AI. I don't know. It was a little ambiguous on that. Shows up, and then he's after some talking, he ends up just resolving everything by fixing it and letting them go. And that's our episode, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one thing I wanted to mention quickly. I meant to say this beforehand, but I forgot before I gave the synopsis. So this is going to sound weird, but previously, we were talking about how Code of Honor was in that, like, big Star Trek convention voted second worst episode of the franchise. Mm-hmm. Well, first, I looked at that list, and they put Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine on there, because which makes me question the list. Not because Move Along Home was a good episode, because it wasn't. But how can anyone say that was a better episode? I'm sorry, how can anyone say that was a worse episode than Prophet and Lace from Deep Space Nine? Like, that's straight up the worst episode of that series, and it didn't make it onto that list? I don't trust it.
Hmm.
Yeah, but apparently, based on IMDb ratings, there's actually... two episodes of The Next Generation ahead of Code of Honor, so we can look forward to those. Well, not for a while. One of them is from season 2 and the other one is from season 7, so
mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's some other bad ones in season 1 which we'll get to, but anyway, back to this episode. Sorry, that came completely out of nowhere. So back to The Last Outpost. So yeah. So, now that we've gotten, out of the way, so this episode I thought started out kind of well, it's hard for me to say it because I've seen all this stuff. I know about the Ferengi and I'm like, oh, the Ferengi, they're such a threat. No, they're really not.
it was okay. It was average, I would say. Not great, but not bad either.
Yeah. The big problem is, even setting aside everything that comes after, they mentioned the Ferengi in the first episode, and it's supposed to, like, you know, set them up. Oh, these are the new big villains. These are, like, the new Romulans or Klingons, except they kind of come across as more goofy than any thing else, and you can't really take them seriously. Like, apparently... Right. Now, this was just what I saw someone say. They didn't say where they got this information from, so I can't verify it, but... There's a part where, especially at the end, where the Ferengi are just all, like, randomly just jumping about all weirdly and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. They're monkeys or something. So, I heard that the direction to the actors playing them was, act like excitable hamsters.
Okay.
So, yeah. Like... That's the big thing, but if you set aside the fact that the Ferengi are not, do not live up to the hype, I don't know. It was kind of, a lot of it was kind of boring. I feel the opening stuff with them trying to get out of the trap kind of went on for too long. The best twist in the episode, honestly, was probably when they find, the way they find out that the Ferengi aren't doing it to them. The Ferengi are actually in the exact same position. Just the way Picard, who's like almost on the verge of surrendering, which, by the way, I should note comes maybe 10 minutes after making sure to emphasize the fact Picard is French.
Yeah.
and then the Ferengi misunderstand it and think they're asking for their surrender, and Picard's just like, just turn that off. They're briefly, oh, they're in the same situation we are. I'm like, okay, that was actually kind of a cool twist. But the rest of the episode was honestly not that interesting. And of course, it's time for all my lists of random thoughts and nitpicks.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing is that the Ferengi don't want to make visual contact and are mysterious, but it also tries to stress the fact they're like basically super capitalists. And if there's one thing that capitalism isn't known for, it's, trying to keep secretive and not contact people who you want to like buy or sell stuff with. That was just kind of like, well, if you want to just buy stuff and sell stuff, then why would you try to be secretive? I'm not saying you can't be secretive about some things, but you would think you would totally want contact.
Mm-hmm.
I think like some spinoff thing tried to justify it by the fact that the Ferengi like leader was so initially terrified about the fact that the Federation supposedly doesn't use money that he was worried that it wouldn't like that idea would infect the Ferengi. And that's why he initially tried to steer clear of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you have, I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Do you have any thoughts you wanted to say?
No, I don't really have any thing to add on that.
Okay. Yeah. I guess the other quick comments I had were, so this is like the relics of a super advanced civilization. Like they're able to just take out the Enterprise, like easy peasy, and such. And somehow a supernova destroyed them all. Like, how does that work? We've even seen that the Star Trek, they are able to tell when a star is going to have that happen. Yet this extremely more advanced civilization can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they just took them by surprise, they weren't in other systems or anything. I don't know. That just struck me as a bit weird. Let's see. The other weird thing I notice is that when the Ferengi are trying to criticize, they're trying to like say, don't trust the humans. They have withheld technology from other races and they have let races die out. And Riker and Data are like, yep, we've totally done that. And then they never give any explanation or defense as to why. And that was a weird part. They don't like just say, well, yes, but the prime directive, we just want to stay out of affairs. Like they don't give any explanation to the guy. And the guy's just like, well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, on the whole, I don't really have too much to say. I mean, I guess a fun bit of trivia is that one of the Ferengi was played by Armin Shimerman, who would later go on to be to be Quark in Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Who he isn't even really recognizable. I guess he must be using like a different like Ferengi sort of I don't know if those are masks or whatever they're wearing, but he definitely has that. But he definitely looks quite different.
Yeah.
And, yeah, other than that, it was just kind of, there. I mean, at least Tasha got to, for the first time so far, look kind of competent, if only because the rest of the cast looked so dumb in how they dealt with the Ferengi.
Yeah. 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 I don't really have much to add on this one. It was like average, pretty much. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad either.
I guess then we can give our scores out of 10. I think I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. Same as I gave for the Naked Now. I think I originally was going to like give it a slightly lower one, but then just talking about it made me realize, it wasn't that bad. It was just kind of dumb in some places. So yeah, I'll give it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll give it a 5. Kind of what I'm saying, it's not all that great, but I don't really have any problems with it. So it's kind of like, okay, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention regarding Code of Honor, because you were wondering if it was like pulled from syndication. So I actually went and looked to see, okay, what channels are currently at like airing Next Generation? Is it there? And it's and the only thing right now that seems to be airing it is BBC America. And I looked at your schedule and yes, that's actually coming up in it's actually coming up in a week. if you want to see Code of Honor, it will be on BBC America. I just felt like it's weird. We had so much to talk about some previous ones, but not really this one. So, that's been Star Trek The Next Generation. Which we're probably going to take a break for a few weeks off of to watch some other stuff. But come 2021, we'll get back to this and be reviewing the rest of the episodes of Season 1.
Yep.
Okay. So, anything else you had to say?
Nope. That's pretty much about it.
All right, we'll see you next week.